Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters, and with me today
is Patrick Barrett. Hi, Judy.
All right. You know, this is our stable of hosts, co-hosts, and others. You know, actually, I think this will actually mark episodes 589 and 590, which is ridiculous. And I was thinking about it, and I was looking back earlier today just to sort of, you know, see how many programs and all these things that we've done with these Cambridge Inside Out programs for quite a while now. Anyways,
I think I've been on quite a few at this point. I can chronicle how much Cambridge has aged me by looking at the previous ones. It's quite dramatic.
Yeah, you know, when I need to grab a screen image from the program, sometimes because when making things available for YouTube, it kind of picks the image for you. And sometimes, like, for example, if it's you and me doing a show, for reasons I'll never explain and I'm thoroughly resentful, it picks three Patricks for the first episode and three Patricks for the next one. So I have to actually grab an image of myself from somewhere else to use, but it can also work the other way. So I think one time I had to go find a picture of you. So I went back and I found these rather young, handsome young man ones from when we did programs like 5 years ago, you know, or more actually, probably more now.
Well, whatever algorithm it is, I'm very pleased that the pictures that YouTube chooses are the ones in my 30s and not the ones currently in my 40s.
Right. So. Yeah, actually, you know, I should take a quick look, as I think we may actually be more or less at 10 years when we start doing these. So back when Susanna Sagat was a co-host initially, and then Judy, and then often yourself.
Who is this young upstart Pat Barrett?
I know. You know, he was just that guy I used to see around Toscanini's once upon a time.
That loud guy who seems angry all the time.
Yeah. But Mr. Barrett, you are, you're amongst many hats you wear and many things you're involved in. One of the principal ones for some time now has been many things related to Central Square,
yes.
Whether it's through the Central Square Business Improvement District and getting us through COVID with Starlight Square and more. So how are things in Central Square these days? I heard we had a little event for starting the season for Starlight today.
That's
the case?
Question that has 15 different answers to, but let's start off with the good stuff. The opening of season 4 of Starlight Square. We opened up today around noon, and Michael Monesteam, Matt Boys Watson, Nina Berg did a phenomenal job of refitting Starlight and getting it ready for our fourth season. It was probably the best it's ever looked. I've always complained a little bit about production value in Central Square, that we're always trying to, you know, turn two pennies into $5, but we really did a phenomenal job and was well attended.
I have to do a particular shout out for one gentleman who's sort of the clerk of the works, making so many things happen. And I saw Mark, you know, we say Mark Boys, or this is Matt Boys Watson, is the younger, right? You know, sometimes they cross up the names, but also Brian Wright, who is
the heavy
lifter of many things in Central Square, whether it's intervening with some of the people who are troubled individuals around Central Square, getting the electrical things set up in Starlight, constructing gazebos. He's a man for all seasons. He's an incredible asset.
Brian is an absolute gem. I'm proud to call him a tenant of mine. He's one of the people who, during the pandemic, I put up in an apartment that I have, and was looking for a way to get out of the YMCA. He has really stepped up and taken charge of the square and our ambassador program. And he is, it's just, you know, if you work in the construction and property management field like I have for so long, there are only a few people who sort of rise up and become your sort of like MVP, star player, the person you can't live without. And Brian is that guy for the bid.
That's absolutely right. I am thrilled every time I cross paths with him in the square. Right. Actually, quite a few good players in the square, including some of the regular beat officers, you know, from the Cambridge Police Department, you know, who really are watching out. And, you know, it's funny because not funny, but it's, I think it's worth noting that so much of when people talk about sort of non-police response and such like that around Cambridge, how even though we have uniformed officers in Central Square, they are engaging in what is essentially everything the supposed non-uniformed response people were supposedly going to be asked to do. They're already doing that.
That's a massive point of frustration for me, because I remember Commissioner Elo as Sergeant Elo, who was one of the first people to arrive at what we call the safety and infrastructure meetings that we used to host every other Wednesday. 14 years ago, where all we were just doing was, what we called community policing amongst the businesses, knowing the people in our neighborhood so there was no overreaction, trying to just clean up the square in terms of like just nips and trash and things, which was really a precursor to what the bid turned into. But this non-sort of police response that people are clamoring for, the reality is it's been happening for a long, long time in Central Square. And the police were the ones who actually started it. So, it's really disappointing to me to see at least 7 city councilors continually throw these people under the bus when we got good guys like Frank and Billy in Central Square, who are without a doubt the most essential players in Central Square in terms of being able to maintain the peace. But
It's remarkable to me when I mention something about, well, there was this problematic area there, they'll say, oh, that's so-and-so, and they'll know their name, they'll know where they're from, they'll know a lot of their personal stories, and they'll tell, say, like, well, yeah, we tried to get that person housing, we did this, we did that, whatever. You know, I think so many people around the city who are love to, sort of jump on board whatever the latest ideological train is, they just don't even understand what's happening on the ground. They have no idea at all.
The one thing I've noticed about the ideologues, and it's something that's really kind of been an evolution of sort of other groups that took all the oxygen out of the room in Cambridge, whether it's the planning board or the Sullivan Chamber on Monday night, is they like to talk a lot. They like to talk about the articles they've read. They like to talk about the things that are happening in other places. One thing they never do is anything. They never actually get into the field. They never actually do the work. They never actually pick up crap on a Saturday. They don't pick up bottles. They don't even engage with the populations that they're talking about. They talk about them sort of this high level, these people, where my ambassador team for the bid, including some of our board members, myself included, and Michael Mona's team, know the names of people up and down the street. We know that they're mostly, we know that in some cases they're not unhoused. We know in some cases that there are issues, but part of the network that we've created is like, a prime example is, I'll leave the officer's name out of it, but a person pulled a knife on an officer in Central Square. And he knows, because we know the guy, we'll call him Jimmy. Jimmy doesn't stab. Jimmy just has a knife. So instead of shooting Jimmy or tackling to the ground, they work it through with Jimmy and the knife goes away. That doesn't always work that way, but 9.9 out of 10 times it does. And that's, maybe we should start reporting those kinds of things so people actually understand what's going on. But right now we have a city council that really likes to take the moment, politicize, and, throw an entire department of the bus to the point where you have officers saying, why am I doing this work? Why am I even here? Unfortunately, with Billy and Frank, like, they're dedicated human beings. They love the work they do. They love the square. But that's like, just like Brian Wright. Was it Flannery O'Connor, a good man's hard to find? You're damn straight. Central Square, a good man is hard to find. And we've got two of them.
Right. And it wasn't always that way. When the business improvement district was being created, I remember all the ceremonial stuff and the claims, well, we're doing this in order to, it was all about either clean up, keeping things clean or doing that. But I knew right away that there were all these other things that were not part of the advertising that were really what it would be all about. One of which was what we're just talking about. But another one was also the sort of sense of promise. So, and we'll see how that plays out in the long haul. COVID really gave everybody a kick in the pants, but a sense of shared investment in a place.
I would have to say COVID if the bid were not in place prior to COVID, Central Square would have fallen. And by that, I mean, we would have been Mass and Cass Jr. We were the only ones operating in the square from March until July. No discredit to anybody else, but myself, Michael Monesteam, and a handful of ambassadors who still stayed on were washing things down, putting water stations in place, doing the work against, you know, what we thought was, you know, at the time, who the heck knows what we were supposed to be doing. But it was things like things in that moment, like Starlight, the patios, putting the heater program we had. All those things were rallying points to the bid that the city then took from us and placed in other places, which was great. But if you look at the city materials for anything they do right now, there's pictures of Starlight, pictures of Central Square, there's pictures of our patios as examples of the good work that they do. But that's the good work that we did. And it was the bid that made all that happen. And that's the truth.
I think that's an accurate chronology of how things went. By the way, speaking of chronology, one of the things I've been mentioning to people a lot, it was kind of a nice little ceremonial moment up at Cambridge Cemetery several weeks ago, you know, with city manager, city staff, and the mayor and others, basically marking the formal end of the emergency, the COVID emergency. I mean, it's not like these things ever fully go away, but it was at least kind of a nice acknowledgement of the fact that, all right, let's get back to living here.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I was saying to people then, and I say to people all the time, I said, you should pause, think about some of what people were saying, doing, and fearing, you know, back in the height of it all, which looking back now may seem ridiculous, but I think it's important for people to just mark it down and say, this is what I was doing. I was washing my mail. I was leaving my groceries on the counter for 24 hours before touching them, even though, you know, the people at the supermarket were covering their hands all over everything then, right?
Taking basketball hoops down, taking tennis
taking court. Basketball hoops down.
Locking exactly. Up children's playgrounds.
That's right. They put chains, they put locks on the gates to playgrounds. Yeah. Now, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's actually horrifying.
Yes.
But, you know, fear can do terrible things to otherwise reasonable people, you know?
I think the thing that was scary for me in that time period, because I'm, you know, I get labeled a lot of things in the city. Very few of them are accurate, but I am someone who doesn't really appreciate the government in my living room. And this was a moment in time where the government wasn't just in my living room, they were everywhere. And some of the decisions that we're making, you know, really highlighted the fact that, you know, a lot of the times we let elections go by and we say, you know, it'd be great if we had good people running, but I'm not going to do it. You're not going to do it. So we'll see what happens and we'll roll the dice. But this is a moment in time when the consequences of our elected leaders was first and foremost in my mind. That's all I could think about. I say, I can't believe these are the people who we have to put our trust in to get us through this moment. And like, I say that with knowing that there's people on the council and in the city that I really enjoy as people and like, but I think when we talk about some of the performative things that they do, and we know what those things are in terms of, like, you know, Budo is the latest sort of performance art piece they're working on. But that gave them an opportunity to do all these things that were like more of a competition with Charlie Baker, or it was sort of like openly acknowledging that we all hate Trump and we're going to do this. Despite the fact that some of those things may not have been in the best interests of anyone in the city, especially children, which I think that's the demographic I think I got truly ignored and is probably the worst off for it. I think, Gen X is oftentimes labeled like the meh generation, but there's a whole generation of children who are going to remember the things that they had to go through in the pandemic, and they're going to look at it.
One thing I would say, though, which I guess was my primary point, which is that if people don't actually talk about this now,
right,
about what happened, or write it down, or tell some stories, do that here, a lot of stuff can just get conveniently forgotten, you know, and I think a lot of this stuff shouldn't be forgotten. I mean, I've been saying to myself that, you know, I think of myself as a rational person, but I had irrational fears, and I'm more than happy to acknowledge it.
Well, I don't think it's like, it's, you know, my son, 9 years old, was talking to a kid in his class about know, not judging past generations on behaviors that she found questionable, which I thought pretty insightful for a 9-year-old. And I feel like, you know, I don't want to review the pandemic to collect receipts and say, oh, you did something or that you shouldn't have done. I think if anything, it's an opportunity to learn so we don't ever do some of the things we did ever again. And also to be able to forgive each other. To say, you know, I remember there was a guy on Western Ave who pulled a knife out on a jogger who ran by him. Because at the time, this guy was reading information about droplets and all that stuff. And he had two kids with him. So he was like, this jogger is assaulting my children with his droplets. So he pulled the knife on, got arrested. But like, I look back at that guy as an example of where the extreme goes. And like, in his mind, he was probably defending his family from an invisible thing that he knew nothing about. It was nonsense. But, you know, here we have.
I remember when I was in my peak of irrationality, right? Which I may be re-entering soon, I don't know. But I remember walking, you know, when I was sort of venturing out and feeling kind of scared and whatever. And somebody was like, I don't know, 100 feet away. And they coughed, they started coughing. And my first thought was, you're gonna kill us all. You know, and anyway, I think it's worth my acknowledging the fact that that's just how crazy some of us could get, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on. And in terms, like, for my mind, I was facing so many things with my family and my business that the bid in the work that we did in defiance of the pandemic, I think, sort of lifted my spirit. It made it so that I could get through it. Building patios for other restaurants, building Starlight, doing that work really was the thing that kept me on the ground.
Well, I mean, you know, my favorite little video clip of you during that was building those patios. And I don't know who has that clip, but you got to get it. It was, you're just working as, you know, just a screw gun, putting some things together. And it's just when it's like 7 seconds clip of, what are you doing there, Mr. Barrett? I'm going, saving capitalism one screw at a time. I thought, boy, that was it.
That was such a great day too, because I, you know, at that juncture, I was about 2 months from handing the keys to my building to the bank and losing everything I own. And I kept my staff, I kept everybody on board, even though we're just burning through our own personal family savings, which is eradicated. And getting tables and chairs out for the restaurants across the street. And like, for people who like didn't spend a lot of time together, because we all own businesses and it's not like we're one big happy family, but like that day, we all became family.
I will say that I wasn't there for the video of you saving capitalism one screw at a time, but later in the day I came by, because I was sort of venturing out then, but I was still sort of timid, you know, masks everywhere, whatever. And that was the day with those tables out there. Maybe it was Dennis Benzan or somebody, maybe it was Morris Nagar said, can I get you a beer?
Yeah.
And there I was sitting there drinking a 16-ounce beer out on one of those tables with my mask off around friends. And it was an emotional moment for me.
It still is. It's one of the high points in terms of my faith in humanity. You know, I think a lot of what was going on at the time was a little bit Hatfields, McCoys, we're fighting this person, we're fighting that person. And here was a moment in time where I'm a restaurant owner who's about to lose his restaurant, building patios for other restaurants. Restaurants are helping each other. They didn't know each other. Now they know each other. People are coming. Our ambassadors are working side by side. I'm working on the ground, putting together, crappy lawn furniture that we scrapped together to save these restaurants. And we saved them. We saved every single one of them because of that effort. And not only
but let's also be clear that there were some of the businesses like the Asgard that is no more.
The Asgard, it was a little bit of a different scenario because they sort of self-selected. They were a part of a restaurant group. They did not really, they weren't making benches with us, but they opened in October and closed right away. But they also closed like 3 of the restaurants. But like the independent restaurants of Central Square, who are sort of one-offs, Phoenix, the Viale, and Dennis's place, and Although I have to say, Artifact Cider has actually closed their doors.
I have my finger on a little bit of the pulse of Central Square, and I know what things are coming and what things are going. And when I read that the cider place was gone, I went, wait a minute, how did I not know about this?
But you know, when I say we saved this place, I mean, we saved them in that moment, but you know, the pain still lingers on. And I think that, you know, a lot of what's changed in the square has made operating businesses a little bit untenable. You know, I feel like why I've been going around telling, reminding people about the planning effort that we did 10 years ago, that we should have adopted 10 years ago. So we had some of the built-in infrastructure to help these businesses survive. But, you know, Artifact had a tough climb. They opened up right in the pandemic, just like me. They were a cider bar, which is very specialized. I don't personally clamor for cider. Perhaps you enjoy a fermented apple.
I'm more of a Guinness stout kind of guy.
As am I. So, but I think like between that tough, it was kind of a tough spot to be in. And, you know, the real sort of culprit right now for the sort of slowdown in activity, the Market Central team, who previously Mass and Main, they've started to slowly populate their spaces, but it's been 4 years now, and they're still at almost 75% vacancy, seemingly intentionally. And it's really having a drag on that whole block.
Yeah. I've heard people speak almost theoretically about the effect of property owners leaving properties vacant, you know, or businesses vacant, storefronts vacant, how it does drag down others. And again, I'm not going to personally criticize Gerald Chan and Harvard Square, but also Central Square. But there is some truth to the fact that if you're, you know, no matter how well-intentioned you may ultimately be, that if you just leave your properties just vacant for a long, long time, it's going to hurt everybody around you. So, you know, you got to step up, and Mass and Main needs to step up.
The mentality has to change, and something that I, you know, try to teach in my school of Central Square. That these spaces are amenities. They are not the income drivers of your building. Mass and Main got all the height above with the residential components. These spaces need to be populated not only to advertise their own building, but to keep the ground floor vibrant, which is a commitment they had made during their zoning ask, which is why they have all these small footprint retail spaces, which are supposed to be for local retailers, but they aren't. So to my mind, this is like another Captain Hindsight moment where, you know, when the city council signs an MOU with a developer, you might want to like proofread it.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those tricky things. I'm not a person who wants to sort of come down heavy handed with government regulations saying you must do this, you must do that. I'm normally very comfortable with the idea of basically getting personal commitments from property owners that this is what we plan to do, and I say, okay, we'll hold you to that. But you really do get a feeling of being burned when in fact it doesn't really play out.
Robert, when I say I'm going to do something, by definition, it is a contract that I will uphold, and I will do the thing that I said, even if it's going to hurt me, especially in the acquisition of a special permit or the acquisition of or the development of a project. When these guys told us that they were going to do a thing, they needed to do the thing. And the fact that they've left these spaces vacant in search of $65 triple net leases or trying to bring in national tenants, to my mind, is just simply a broken promise. And in a really, in this business, all we have is our word. It's all we have. So, you know, you get a good sense of why the frequent flyers at the planning board or the BZA, or they all show up jaded all the time, because these promises get broken and no one's really going back and saying, hey, you know, to CDD's credit, which I don't like to give them too much credit because they're an activist organization and they're terrible. But Pardee Savari has tried to push them. And she's done an admirable job in that regard, but there's just no teeth. There's no teeth in this agreement. So where we expect people to keep their word and be honest business people, Twining and crew didn't do that. Right. So they've
I think in some ways it's a long-term shift in how people understand their own properties too. Yeah. You know, so in other words, it's not just a matter of maximizing dollars on every square foot of the property. The thing is, you do have to make a distinction between, the other benefits that come with the ground floor retail over and above just maximizing your dollars.
But Robert, you're talking about Sunday beer money in terms of the value of the project. Those retail spaces, 800 square feet, 900 square feet, they're going to generate at most 30,000 to 40,000 a year.
Right. So people need to fully embrace that reality, though, and plan and lease so accordingly.
On a positive note there, LaSalle, who's taken over for Twining is no longer part of the project. The bid will be taking over a good portion of the spaces on Columbia Street starting in July. They're fitting them out now and turning in what's called a vanilla box. And then the bid is going to be putting some of our opportunists and some of our more active active items that we have over at Starlight and putting them in those spaces to activate that street. So there will be an activation coming in July. It's the only because Michael, under the iron fist tutelage of myself, hammered them hard and got them to bend.
Well, that's really good to hear, actually. By the way, we're less than a minute, and then we'll have to take a 3-minute break. I just thought it worth mentioning.
But by the way, talking that long already? Jeez.
Yeah. But speaking of Central Square, I just want to let people know that there are two vacancies going to be coming up for the Central Square Advisory Committee. Both of them are, I think, one has to be an architect. In other words, it's supposed to be a business or a business, a tenant business or whatever in the square. So if somebody's interested in that, please get even more interested and apply. I think it got to late June in order to apply. So just to be aware of that. So anyway, when we come back in a few minutes, we're going to talk a little bit about some other matters, including the fact that this is a municipal election year and there's, stuff either happening or not happening. So anyway, we'll
heard
be back.
Some stuff, heard some stuff, bro.
See you then.